Polkadot needs businesses. Polkadot needs people that have customers, that have users, that have convinced someone other than the Web3 Foundation that what they're doing is a good idea.
The launch team wishes you good luck and Godspeed.
Space Monkeys, blasting off with Fabian Gompf. He's the CEO of the Web3 Foundation. We are very lucky to have him with us today. Fabi, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much for being here. You are relatively new in this role of CEO at the Web3 Foundation. I believe you joined officially, was it September of last year?
Yeah, like mid and September, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so you've been at it for 5 months or something like that?
Yeah, minus Christmas break and things like that.
But
yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. Plus, like, you know, a month of onboarding, but yeah, something like that.
Where did you come from? Were you part of the ecosystem before?
Yeah, exactly. So I was one of the first hires at Parity. So this is like prior to Polkadot being a thing, right? So
okay.
When I joined Parity, we were like mostly Ethereum focused.
Mm-hmm.
So people like Rob and Bjorn and so on were there at the time as well. But it was really just a bunch of sweaty devs in a living room in Berlin. The Polkadot paper already existed, but no plan on sort of like what to do with it.
Wow.
And
what did you think about the Polkadot paper at that time? I mean, everything's Ethereum and here comes this.
Honestly, at the time, I don't think I was like well-versed enough in like blockchain technology to question anything in this paper. I was like, this all sounds like a good idea, right?
Yeah. Nice.
At the time, there was a lot of excitement, especially Parity had this like was in an odd situation because the Parity Ethereum, like the Rust implementation, was one of the most used implementation. It was really just the Go implementation and the Rust implementation.
Mm-hmm.
So we were powering big parts of the Ethereum network, but there's no business model. I mean, you can kind of only lose, like, you know, a bunch of people are using you. If something happens, everyone complains, but who's going to pay for a Rust? I mean, unless the Ethereum Foundation gives us a grant or something like that, which it eventually did.
Yeah.
But it was clear that Polkadot is also a more interesting business proposition beyond just more interesting technology.
No doubt. What was your role in that sweaty living room?
I mean, honestly, I started as a kind of like, hey, I'm here. Give me 3 months. And if I'm helpful, keep me. If not, kick me out again.
Were you developing?
So I have an electrical engineering background.
Okay.
You know, I knew how to code a bit. But amongst the Gavs and the Robs, like, I was never a productive Rust developer. So I was never a developer at Parity.
Okay.
But I was doing like product related things. I was doing ecosystem related things, you know, organizational development kind of things with very many heads, as it's, I think, common in early stage startups.
As the group started working on implementing this paper,
like, it was clear that, hey, we want to get serious about Polkadot.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff that Parity wasn't good at, had never done, that suddenly became relevant.
Okay.
So it was clear we need a bunch of money. So, you know, we wanted to do some form of sale.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do some form of sale, you ideally have some form of foundation in some jurisdiction that's favorable for that.
Sure.
You have to think about marketing and investor relations. You have to hire a bunch of people to do those things. Now we suddenly really had like a multi-year development roadmap, right, that we somehow had to implement.
Yeah.
I was across a lot of those things, I would say.
Really?
Yeah. So I left Parity in, 2021?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, Parachain's launched and so on, and I had the feeling, okay, this thing's running, my job here's done, it's time to leave. And the last 3 years of that, I would say, I was really mostly focused on ecosystem development. So once we had a technology for someone to build on, like once thinking about an ecosystem made sense, I started to think about an ecosystem, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So you helped set up the Web3 Foundation.
I mean, I was not in any official capacity, but at the beginning, like, Parity was already there, but we needed to find people to actually work in the foundation. We needed to think about where to do that. It was the time of the first Web3 Summit, like the sale and the Web3 Summits and so on, where the foundation was really brought on the map for the first time. So a lot of those thoughts and initiatives came out of Parity until there eventually was an organization and a team to take care of it.
Can I ask, how old were you at that time when you were doing all that work?
So, I mean, I looked younger than I am.
Okay.
I joined almost right out of uni. I joined Parity, so I had a quick spurt in like German automotive.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, in the R&D department of Porsche, so like sports, electric sports vehicles.
Wow.
And I mean, that's a story in itself, I guess. But I joined Parity, like 25, something like that.
Yeah, sure. Incredible.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said you left in 2021. Where'd you go? Were you still in the blockchain world?
I mean, sort of, like, uh-huh. You know, angel investing here a little bit, ooh, following what's going on. Mm-hmm. I obviously had a lot of relationships, especially in the Polkadot ecosystem, so helping people here and there. Mm-hmm. But mostly I took off for like a year, 1.5 years.
Nice.
I eventually joined the Web3 Foundation Council, so it's kind of like the supervisory board.
Okay.
And that's also when, you know, how sort of like the role as the CEO then came to be.
Okay, so you're on the board. What does this board do?
So it's foundation law in Switzerland is somewhat analogous to the law for like public companies, right? You have a supervisory board, Stiftungsrat, as they call it here, which oversees the executive team. Mm-hmm. And it depends a little bit how you set the foundation up, but you know, they sign off on strategy. They kind of like outsource, I guess, a lot of the responsibility to the management team, but oversee the management team.
I see.
So this is not a full-time role, right? This is like, you know, once every couple of weeks, you have a meeting, you get updates, you maybe make some larger strategic decisions, but it's primarily there to keep the rest of the organization accountable.
Understood. And who else is on that council?
So, I've left the council since, and those are my bosses now.
Yes, right.
But now there is Aaron, who is in the foundation from the very start. I think he's, you know, if someone really is the foundation, I think it's Aaron, and he's the president now as well.
This was Gav's friend from, like, childhood friend,
they
right?
know each other for a very long time. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. It's OB, who's also a very long-standing foundation council member, and Raul, who's also long-standing Polkadot ecosystem member, and it's Raul, who's also in the Polkadot ecosystem since forever. Yeah,
wonderful.
So a group of three that have really proven their value in the ecosystem.
So when you got the call, when they were looking for this new CEO, from a councilman's point of view, what did the Web3 Foundation look like?
I think to me, a lot of the stuff, like, there was a very solid foundation in the foundation, right? It's important that there's certain things that the foundation does that need to work really securely and well.
Sure.
So it's obviously like regulatory oversight, foundation sits on a lot of crypto assets that need to be managed well, things of that nature, right? Where it's important that it's stable and it's functioning well and you don't want to rock the boat. There's other things where the foundation needs to be quite strategic and potentially also quite nimble. How to deploy that capital, how to do research and what kind of technologies to look into. Education is a big part, like what are actually the big themes, what are the blockers, things of that nature. And I'd say like the first part worked pretty well. The second part, they didn't fully adjust to the reality of 2023.
I see.
Joined, right?
Okay.
They were, like if you take the grants program, for example, as a capital deployment mechanism, as the main capital deployment mechanism of the foundation at the time, we can now talk about what we've changed since, was very much like, okay, you have an idea, tell us about that idea. We're going to split it up in milestones. We're going to pay you, you know, 20K, 30K, 50K, you know, along the way. We're going to check if you actually fulfilled that. It all needs to be open source. It needs to be some common good technology for the Polkadot ecosystem. And then the relationship ends.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's good for some things.
Sure.
But that's not what the Polkadot needs right now in terms of capital deployment, right? Especially not with something like the treasury in place and things like that, right? Polkadot needs businesses. Polkadot needs people that have customers, that have users, that have convinced someone other than the Web3 Foundation that what they're doing is a good idea.
Yeah.
And the grants program is not set up to do that.
Ah,
and
right.
So we still have a grants program, but we want to fund things that are sensible to fund through a grants program, We want to fund other things through other things, right? Wonderful. And so that's just one example of, right, where I think the foundation wasn't necessarily always aware enough of how does the world around it look like, and what does it need from the foundation?
I see. Yeah.
And, you know, what is the Web3 Foundation? I think in many ways, the Web3 Foundation is a service function to the Polkadot ecosystem.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's there to make Polkadot successful. And what does that mean? It means you can make the technology great and so on. Of course, there needs to be a vision. And if you would have just asked users, Ethereum users back in the day, like, hey, what do you need? No one would have said Polkadot, right? So, like, of course, it's not just a service function, right? It's also there needs to be a vision and something that needs to come out of the foundation and out of parity and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff where people are now in the ecosystem, the technology is there, and they need certain things.
Yeah. Right?
Foundation is relatively rich in know-how, you know, especially with an in-house research team.
Yeah.
It's relatively rich in capital, but it's poor in personnel, right? We are like 40 people.
Yeah.
So it's...
That's it? 40 people?
Yeah, around that.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, with the assets that we have, which, like I said, is mostly sort of like know-how and financial assets, we should make sure that the people in the Polkadot ecosystem can be as successful as possible. Right?
So what goods and services do you believe the current tech stack of Polkadot are most suited to solve?
So I think Polkadot occupies an interesting space in the overall blockchain space, especially around decentralized blockchain application platforms, right? If you think about a matrix with, and you have on the one hand, you have sort of like developability or like technical freedom, and on the other axis, you have like resilience, right? You take something like Bitcoin, you can do it's very limited what you can do on Bitcoin, but it's highly resilient. Right. You take a bunch of other like next gen kind of platforms, right? They are usually very high in developability. You can do a lot of different things, right? If you think about layer 2 rollups and stuff like that. But they're happy to compromise quite a bit on resilience, right? If you think about how decentralized sequencers are and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Polkadot tries to occupy sort of like this space where you have a lot of technical freedom, but you do not compromise on resilience.
Wow.
I think we should be shouting that much more off the roofs. I don't think this is like really how we position ourselves, but I think it's how we should, you know. Compared with the level of resilience that we have right now, I don't think there's really all that much. So
I love that. I love that that view. And, you know, this new Polkadot that we're building toward right now seems to be trying to hold on to this resilience while increasing the availability for developers. Should be more flexible, should be more available.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're pushing on both fronts.
Right? Yeah, yeah, and right.
Developability and like sort of like the technical freedom and so on, right? We can talk about agile core time and things like that, right?
Yeah.
Like we essentially put another layer of abstraction on how you can actually deploy on Polkadot. And there's lots that goes in that direction.
Okay.
It's resilience is also on the social layer.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, what happens if someone knocks on the door of the Web3 Foundation or Parity? Like, can something like, or key people, can something like Polkadot actually survive? And I think with rollout of OpenGov last year, with now slowly moving to more and more people and organizations being funded through Treasury, with the thought, you know, again, away from like, hey, grant from the Web3 Foundation and the next grant from the Web3 Foundation towards like, hey, you got to build a business here that's self-sustaining. Those are all, you know, it's in the same kind of thought process. There's resilience on the technical layer. We don't want the chain to halt. We don't want chain splits. We don't want security breaches. We want to have high economic security on Polkadot. But there is resilience on the social layer too.
Yeah.
And in some sense, what decentralized futures is you know, reweaving the social fabric of Polkadot a little bit. So that's a side goal, I guess.
Well, look, I'm chomping at the bit to talk about decentralized futures as well, but just before we get there,
sure.
I think it's important to point out that when you arrived at the Web3 Foundation, this was just a few weeks, a month before this decentralization of Parity was announced to the public. So I'm sure there were some whispers of it. I'm sure there was some idea that things needed to change at the time. What can you tell us about that situation from the point of view of CEO of the Web3 Foundation?
Yeah. So it was definitely like end of last year, especially like end of summer kind of last year was a tricky time also for the foundation. So when I came in, I knew we had to change things. Like that's, you know, from being in the foundation council and before I took the job, obviously I've thought about what am I getting into? And I knew that's gonna, we need some change. I think how, what kind of change, how big that change needs to be, that wasn't clear. Those are the things that sort of like came out of initial analysis. And if anything, I think there was a lot more change than I thought there would be. But I think we're now coming out, really end of last year, we came out on the other side, at least on the foundation side. There is a different strategic direction. I think we're moving much faster. I think we're listening better to the ecosystem. I think we're working more on the relevant problems.
Yeah.
But it's a process, right? It's not like, 1 month we change everything and then suddenly it's a whole different organization. At least my vision for the foundation is more realized.
What is that vision?
Comes back to what I was saying earlier, like being much more aware of its surroundings, being much better plugged into the overall ecosystem, being less hands off, or at least picking its battles within the ecosystem. Like, it's not like the foundation can solve any problem and tap into every opportunity, but there's certain things the foundation is well positioned to go after, and identifying those and then actually doing it, that's a big part of it. And for everything else, finding strong partners, and I think that's establishing the foundation as a trusted brand and partner, I think, is a big part of that. People should know, hey, we're here to help. You can rely on us.
Yes.
We're not good in everything, but if we have complementary skills, let's partner up and tackle it together.
Nice.
I think that's more my vision, right? And especially some of, if everything is going well, I think the vision for the foundation to be hands-off is a great vision.
Right.
You know?
Nice.
If you have the feeling, things are going in the right direction, let it run. Don't change anything.
Yeah.
I think we have some things where we need solving, need to steer the ship a little bit more.
Uh-huh.
And so rolling up our sleeves, getting a bit more hands-on is the right approach.
So this futures grant, decentralized futures grant, you settled on 20 million, was it USD or Swiss francs in the end?
Same. I mean, it's roughly the same exchange rate. But we're thinking in Swiss francs. We communicated in US dollars because my fear was like, no one knows what to do with Swiss francs.
All good. And 5 million dot.
5 million dot, that's it.
How did you decide on this allocation?
I mean, multiple variables. One was certainly like a sort of like a bottom-up analysis on what we think we want to see in the ecosystem and what we think that costs.
Yeah.
There's an element of like, we wanted the program not to run over the next 3 years or anything like that, but we wanted to have it like a quick but aggressive injection, right? We wanted it to be something where we can really kickstart a bunch of teams like now, and that they were like going next year.
It's like a 12-month.
A 12-month kind
period,
of thing,
right?
Yeah. We opened applications end of last year, and once everyone was back from vacation, we started announcing the first teams. There was also a question of like, how much capital can you reasonably deploy in a year without just doing stupid things?
It's not easy, right?
Yeah. So there was a clear cap also in terms of that. And then there's obviously like, we do treasury management. We think about runways. We think about how much capital do we need to realize the future vision of Polkadot. And there's some limitations on how much money we want to spend in a given year.
Sure.
Given that. So a combination of those things.
So here you are, the Web3 Foundation, wanting Polkadot to be a success. And then you have Parity saying, okay, we're going to decentralize, I don't know, was it 2/3 of the workforce in the end? Or
yeah, something like half, I think.
Okay, and then this includes a bunch of important services to the ecosystem, marketing, business development. What are some other categories that were in there?
I mean, I think those are the big ones. So certainly there's more nuance to it. But if you really look at, Parity departments or functions, it mostly related to marketing and ecosystem development, which is a pretty broad category of things. So is marketing, to be honest. But I think decentralized futures is a good idea either way.
Okay.
But Parity refocusing on, what it's traditionally been really good at and continues to be really good at, which is like the core engineering side of things.
Yes.
put some urgency on decentralized futures.
Yes, because we
wanted to make sure we have, you know, Polkadot ecosystem. It's well communicated, what we're doing. We want to have major events over the course of the year. We want the social media accounts to be active. We want people to be out there convincing builders that Polkadot is a great choice for them. We want people to run accelerators and incubators and all those things, right? In some sense, it's good because it kept us, it gave us a clear deadline. It's like, by this time, you got to have a plan, right?
Yeah, we can't let the main Polkadot account just go kaput, right?
Yeah, and so some of decentralized futures, especially at the beginning, still to this day, here and there, is a little bit like duct taped together because we want it to be fast.
Yeah, yeah.
At the same time, it meant it's fast, you know? It means we're like quick on it.
Sure.
And I don't know if we would have done it as quickly, but I actually think it was better to do it that quickly.
For sure.
Because there's one resource that Polkadot, I think, doesn't have a ton of, and it's just time. You know, I think there's, I think Ben Horowitz speaks of like kimchi problems. You know, Polkadot has some kimchi problems. Like the deeper you bury them, the hotter they get. You want to solve them quickly. You want to, you know, for example, capital inflows for Polkadot ecosystem aren't great, right? Which means we don't have a ton of liquidity on the protocols, and we don't have, if you are a founder and you want to raise capital for a Polkadot project, investors are a little bit, Polkadot, we're not quite sure. If that problem persists for a long time, that's bad. You know, you want to solve that problem as quickly as possible.
Yes.
So time's not, for some of the things that decentralized futures is trying to tackle, time's not necessarily on our side. So being fast is good.
I love that. What's the quality of the marketing proposals that you've seen for decentralized futures? Is it in line with your expectations?
Yes. Well, in the top quartile, I think it's exceeding my expectations.
Wow.
Right.
Good.
Which is the quartile we're going to fund. But of course, if you like, you know, at the tail end of a bear market or in the middle of the bear market, who knows where things are going, you raise your hand, you say like, hey, we next year we want to spend $45 million or whatever. There's going to be a lot of people who reach out. And some of those proposals are not, you know, not of high quality. I don't think that's a surprise.
But yeah, yeah.
We're now at... you know, well over 100, like, you know, closing up to 150 proposals, not just marketing, but generally
across
the whole thing.
Wow.
So if you have that much in terms of volume, you also have really interesting peaks, right? And so that's the stuff we're looking at. And I think with Distractive, for example, we're seeing that now on the marketing side, there's a bunch of people who would have liked to, you know, take that spot that Distractive is now taking. But they were just the best, you know, and so that's a little bit also the beauty of decentralized futures, where we have some competition going, right? We have benchmarks now. We can look at like, hey, these people want to do this for that much. These people want to do this for that much, right? Or they're willing to, you know, take, you know, 80% of it in vested DOT, or they're willing to, you know, they already have paying customers for the prototype or whatever it is, right? The model of like more centralized stewardship with like Parity and Web3 in the middle is, I think, is as old as markets get, right? You have a monopoly in terms of like centralized stewardship, and then you don't necessarily know what's on the other side in terms of like competition. Now we have a bit more of a market-based mechanism going.
Good.
And with on the marketing side, obviously we don't know yet. You know, maybe it all crashes and burns tomorrow. We've just announced it last week, but I'm very optimistic that this is going to pan out well. No pressure to Distractive, but and it's not just Distractive, right? There's by the time this airs, we have Yearn on the event side at the very least, and we have.
Good.
I think 8 or 10 proposals that we are either have signed a contract with already, or that we are like in very deep conversations. We've essentially decided we want to do it. It's just not announced yet.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So announcements are going to come. We're going to announce 1 to 2 teams a week from here on out, right? Like, it's going to be pretty rapid.
That's good. And when do funds hit the accounts?
It depends what kind of funding mechanism is in place. So, again, in stark contrast to something like grants, where we say, apply, this is the process, you have to follow this process, those are our rules, you want to get funding from us, you have to play by our rules. Decentralized futures, we kind of flip the model. We say, here's a bunch of money, tell us what you want to do and how you're going to be most successful doing that. And we take that as the starting point for a conversation on how to support people. So this could be an investment. It could be more of a service level kind of agreement. Mm-hmm. It could be a grant. I mean, maybe it's a grant, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on how that looks like, funds hit accounts at different times. Like if you get an investment, it's upfront money, right? But it's also, we want to see some other investors. We want to see some angels. We want to see a clear plan to, like, we want to see a business model. Maybe it's a service level agreement. Funds hit the month, hit the accounts every month, but we're a little bit less concerned about, you know, having a business model or something like that, because what you're doing is a pure cost center. I mean, take something like events. Right? Polkadot wants to have a flagship event or multiple flagship events a year. That's probably always going to be some form of cost for the Polkadot ecosystem. I mean, of course, we can charge horrendous ticket prices and get sponsors and so on. But maybe that's a model going forward. We'll see. But in some sense, that is a cost center for Polkadot. Mm-hmm. And so forcing them into a business model, I don't know, that's probably not what we want to do. So just making sure they have their expenses covered and know how to, you know, go to the treasury for anything extra and generally have a path to make themselves independent as an agency in the ecosystem is probably what you want to do rather than invest in it.
You know? Yeah, there's some neutral services that you want to maintain.
Yeah.
Utility to the ecosystem, really, right?
For sure. And I think the long-term vision would be we get all of these people work for the Polkadot network.
Mm-hmm. For the treasury.
Yeah, for the treasury.
That's how it has to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have to be reasonable about it. The treasury works well for some things, doesn't work well for other things. Mm-hmm. We launched OpenGov last year. We shouldn't expect by mid next year everything to go through that. I think it's going to take some time for the Polkadot political spectrum to fully form, for people to really engage, for people to understand how to deal with it, for bounties and collectives and so on to form, for the Polkadot treasury to diversify into stable coins and things like that. So there's work to be done, but the long-term vision, I think, should be you're a cost center to the Polkadot ecosystem or to the Polkadot network, then to work for the Polkadot network. I mean, Polkadot network should pay for it.
Right? Yeah, yeah, sure.
So, and then the foundation can jump in wherever it's not working or wherever, you know, we can pluck the holes. But
super, yeah.
I think that would be ideal. Yeah.
So it's really this market is kind of opening up, right? We go from this monopoly, like you said, to this small pool, this small marketplace where this Web3 futures, and then eventually that's going to spill into this larger marketplace where we're already determining how much marketing costs and how much we're willing to pay for certain exposure and all this.
I would love to see the Polkadot treasury pay, I don't know what the term for this is, but kind of like full-time people that think about governance, if that makes sense. Like people who think about collectives and bounties, people who think about how people should think about Polkadot governance, if that makes sense.
Like administrators to governance.
Yeah, and also like the political philosophy behind it and right? If you think about like the Ellis and Bobs of the world, right, that have done a lot of work there. Mm-hmm. I think we have the logic now, but just because you have the logic, I mean, so much in traditional politics, like how states are governed, for example, is culture, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, you have a constitution, you have all kinds of rules and so on, but often why it works is because people follow certain unspoken rules. And I think we can do better on the unspoken rules.
That's so cool. Yeah. You know, it's kind of happening already. We just, in the past few weeks, saw people getting funding for providing expert opinions on big ticket referenda going through.
Yeah.
That's kind of an interesting thing there. People could start building a reputation around expertise, providing that to token holders.
Absolutely. Well, we're actually funding someone through Decentralized Futures, probably announcement as airs, if not, it doesn't matter, but who we want to essentially be an evaluator of treasury proposals, right? Look at what people want to get funding for, see what they have delivered, see if it makes sense from a technical perspective. I'm mostly talking about tech proposals here, but we could have the same for like other things, right?
Right, yeah.
Because this idea that all of the voters have to vote on all of the proposals and have to have an opinion on all of these things is completely unrealistic. Working with experts, working with subcommittees, this is how politics works, right? And so we have to learn a little bit more from that. I would also love for people to be more transparent, not just about how they vote on a single proposal, but how they think about certain topics that come up over and over again.
Yeah.
Where do you fall on the political spectrum of Polkadot? Do you think we're spending too much or too little in the treasury at the moment? Are you more so like fiscally conservative or not?
Yeah.
Do you think marketing is a rate limiting factor for Polkadot's success?
Mm-hmm.
If so, okay, you're going to be more pro funding marketing proposals, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like people should think about that on a higher level before the proposals come in and then sort of like vote consistently for there to be like parties and camps to form and people can delegate to it, right?
Yeah,
like that's more what I want to see. And we're actually going to have a bit of a program, if you want, that coming out of from the foundation that's going to encourage people to do that, because I think that's kind of missing right now. Even for me personally, if I think about, hey, who do I delegate my votes towards? It's like, yeah, what am I getting? You know, like, I'm not sure. Like, what do you stand for? And I think we have to be more transparent about that. About that. Yeah.
Ah, yes. I think I know what you're talking about. This the capital that's behind the 1,000 Validators program, I think, is getting deployed in a new way.
Yeah, exactly. I think the tagline of it, I guess, to understand it in pretty easy terms, is it's going to be the 1,000 Validator program, but instead to bootstrap a validator community, we want to bootstrap an active and engaged voter community.
Right.
And we would actually use the same stashes for that, and we would have some rules around how public people need to be about their political agenda, how active they are in voting, how civil they are in their discourse, and so on, right? We want to see, we don't want to support a certain agenda. We don't care, you know, all of those are valid political opinions to hold.
Sure, sure.
But we want to see, you know, we're not pro or con any of that, but we're pro transparency and civil discourse.
I love it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about some of these programs or companies or individuals being funded today? How do you feel about the possibility that some of them are going to be rejected by the broader community? Some of them aren't going to work out.
Yeah. Do you mean things coming out of decentralized futures, yeah?
Or through from any Web3 Foundation initiatives, you know? I'm just thinking like, as we get away from this, the boss, the central authority, and then, you know, you create these programs, but what if some of them don't work out? Like, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fine, you know? I think, like, what I'm seeing a lot in decentralized futures, but also often in the treasury, is people are saying, I want to do this, and this is exactly how much it's going to cost, and I want you, whoever's on the other side, to cover that whole cost, right? And so I'm not taking any risk. I'm not taking, you know, this is just what it's going to cost, and if everything goes well, this is how much it's going to, you know, how much I need, and I'm going to do it. I think that's fine for some things. Maybe even fine for many things. But there's lots of stuff where, just coming back to this thought, right? Like, we want, ideally, you're self-sustained in some sense, right? And that means you have to have a bit of an entrepreneurial mindset. You take some risk at the beginning, but there's a big reward for you in the end. Think about what that reward could be, right? And don't pitch just, hey, cover, you know, be successful for me, please, Treasury, right? Rather like, hey, I want you to increase the chances for me to be successful, right? But I still have to, you know, perform. And then on the other side, it could be really interesting, right?
Sure.
So I think there's lots of stuff that we could apply that model more radically rather than just the, like, what's the cost basis of things?
Yeah.
And cover that cost basis, and then it's covered for a year, and then everyone, after that year, everyone's like, okay, and now what?
Right. So often these things don't even work out, actually.
Yeah, that's also not how, at least if you do something very interesting, meaning something that maybe someone hasn't done before, maybe was something where there's competition, right? Things don't work out the way you put them in a spreadsheet.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
And so,
and the longer the runway, the more it deviates.
Exactly. And so what that often leads to, people know that, and so they just like overcharge, right? They're like, well, and here's like a 50% top up because something's going to go wrong.
I see, yeah.
It's like, yeah, sure. I think more interesting would be iterative approaches, right? Hey, I'm going to try this. If I'm going to be successful, then I'm going to build on that. And maybe I come back to a treasury. Maybe I find someone to invest. Maybe
I love seeing customers. People start small and build that reputation and come back for bigger and bigger, you know.
And I like big visions and dreams.
Of course.
But the, like, I have never done anything in that sense, like in that area. Yeah. And now I have a huge plan, right? It's like, let's start small and see and go from there.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. So you were speaking earlier about outreach, the Web3 Foundation being a bigger part of the ecosystem inside and out. One thing you did inside recently that I thought was really cool was you flipped $1 million into treasury bills through Centrifuge. That was so cool. Was this under your watch?
I mean, it was in the making before I joined.
Okay.
There's lots of other people in the team that should get credit there.
Sure.
I just kind of came in and said, yeah, sounds like a good idea.
Okay.
But it's actually part of a bigger strategy that, again, was in the making before, but we really want to double down on that, which is what I would call strategic treasury management for the foundation. Mm-hmm. Well, we hold a bunch of assets, financial assets. And at the same time, we're in the business of stewardship for a platform that can allow for radically new financial protocols.
Yeah,
I think we should bring those two things together more often, right? Why are all the assets of the foundation sitting in like some banks and with some asset managers? I mean, some of it should probably because we want to make sure it's not all gone when something gets hacked. But if we're holding treasury bills anyways, may as well do it through Centrifuge. If we're holding US dollars anyways, might as well hold Polkadot USDC or USDT, right? And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff like that where we want to do something with our money anyways. We want to support people that that can do something with that money, right, in our ecosystem. Let's support them strategically. So that's really a, in some sense, a new function in the foundation that's building, that we're building up. Centrifuge was the first... let's try it out, see how it goes. Expect many, many more of those.
Any epic Degen plays that you want to share?
I don't think I can really share any of them
just kidding.
We're still a, not-for-profit foundation, registered in Switzerland. There's all kinds of things we can and can't do.
Of course.
But holding T-bills on chain is definitely something we can do, and so let's do it. And there's a lot of other things that are, on the like Wild West scale that are definitely reasonable for us to do.
So cool. So how do we solve this problem that you brought up before of the inflow of capital?
Yeah, I think we have to tackle it from many sides.
Okay.
I don't think this is going to be we have to do this. And it's solved. I don't even think there's going to be a moment necessarily where we say like, oh, it's solved. It's going to be like, it's more going to be how much is coming in. And I don't think anyone's ever going to be like, oh, we're getting too much capital, So it's just something we should be continuously pursuing.
Okay.
And I don't think we're pursuing it enough at the moment. So, yeah, I think there's a bunch of things that we have in the pipeline that I think we have to make a bit more progress before we talk about it. But there's a couple of things that would definitely help. So one is, I think Polkadot at the moment is not particularly well understood in the investor community. And there's many facets to that. It has to do with narratives. A lot of in the bear market, a lot of the narratives have sort of like rolled over into like L2s and things like that. So like highly Ethereum aligned protocols, and Polkadot is a kind of like a roll-up protocol, if you want,
and
a lot of what we're seeing on Ethereum now, you'll find with different names in the Polkadot paper, right? Like it's what we've implemented. It's just that we've we solved which development toolkit are you using for it, and how do you do interoperability, and how does security work right out of the gate, right? And so I think we have there's a narrative piece that we have to get right. There is related to the narrative piece, but there is a lot of investors these days look on on-chain metrics. They look at what's going on chain, the times of just selling dreams. It's a little bit over. It's not 2017 anymore where everyone's like, we use a paper that's going to be good at some point and everyone throws money at it. Now a lot of people just look at it, well, how many people are using it? And we're terrible at representing ourselves when it comes to on-chain data, because
what's hard to see right now is, for one thing,
for sure, it's not the blame is on us. You know?
Well, okay, all of us, really. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
We're all, we're all working on it.
On us as, a, as an ecosystem of like, properly communicating that. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean. I, you know, you go on a lot of these dashboards, and it's like they show the relay chain, right? It's like, hey, how many active accounts are on the relay chain? Like, how many transactions are being routed through the relay chain on a monthly or daily basis? And if anything, we're working towards reducing that amount at the moment because you want to push that all to like system parachains, right? Because we want to have the relay chain capacity to actually validate the things that plug into it. So it, people are not looking at the right things very often, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's one thing. The other thing, there's also, you know, Polkadot has, if you look at, you know, the relevant on-chain metrics over the last 3 months, 4 months, they're up month over month. I mean, I think it's looking, we're on the right track now.
Yes.
Right? But for the 1.5 years before that, we weren't on the right track, right? And so I'm definitely carefully optimistic that, you know, whether you look at the right data or not, the actuals on chain are improving quite quickly right now. And we're not even talking yet about things, you know, like mythical or things like that, where we could talk about orders of magnitude jump overnight if those kind of deployments are happening. Mm-hmm. So the solution is in front of us, but we haven't grabbed it yet. And so that's going to be an important piece for capital inflows. There's other things around like custodian integrations and exchange. How easy is it at the moment to get your hands on Polkadot USDC or something like that, right?
Yeah.
It's, we have to also think about who are the people of capital and what are their workflows. And unless we have those covered, you know, well, there's not going
to
be that
much. We need to go toward the capital a little bit now.
Yeah, we have to make it easy for people. Yeah. Get the friction down for sure.
Yeah.
I think we should think about, you know, a Polkadot ecosystem fund, something like that, like a some form of like VC fund that's not just thinking about returns, but also what's strategically really important for Polkadot, and fund those kind of projects. Because Polkadot is often, in terms of narratives, a little bit offbeat, which I don't think is a bad thing. Like, it just means we're not necessarily chasing what's out there at the moment. But yeah, if you're building a, I mean, this is like a theoretical example now, but you're building a block-based marketplace. If you're not really in Polkadot as a VC, I don't think you will understand really why that might be a huge opportunity for you, right?
Right.
But a highly aligned ecosystem fund will deploy capital in no time, right? So there are also some like institutions and players I think we should make sure exist in a Polkadot ecosystem that are currently not there.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
What would you say the mission of Polkadot is? Core mission.
Core mission of Polkadot as a like a technology, as a network, as an ecosystem.
Yeah, in service of the world,
In service of the world, yeah. I think Polkadot, it comes a little bit back to what I was saying with like, you know, really high degree of technical freedom and resilience. And I think especially on the resilience part, it's really hard to say, you know, what are going to be the use cases on Polkadot in like 10 years' time. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think as a category, having a platform that, you know, allows for what generally the innovation of blockchains is, no middleman kind of value transfer and data exchange and all of that. But then on top of that, have that platform itself be fully its own organism, right? Fully like self-evolving.
Yeah.
I think is, you know, encoding a movement into code. Right? And I don't think that really exists somewhere else, right?
It doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't think either, yeah.
Yeah. So I think Polkadot's mission is to get that going, right? Mm-hmm. And what we need for that is we need escape velocity, right? I think for the foundation, success would be if we're not needed for all this anymore.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
If I can sit there at some point and be like, okay, let's, this is still what we have in terms of financial assets in the foundation. Let's donate it to the treasury, shut the place down and go home kind of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, start being independent agents in the Polkadot ecosystem.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what success would look like. So I don't think we're, you know, that's going to be a while from now, but step by step, yeah.
It's exciting stuff, Fabi.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming on the podcast and sharing this
thanks
all with us today.
Me. Thanks for what you're doing. I think it's actually something I can say with Decentralized Futures, we were thinking about, oh, we should do interviews with, like, you know, applicants, and, you know, we should really make sure people know about it. And before we even could, you know, could that get going, you already had Distractive on, you had Transistor on, and so on. So, yeah, I'm just saying, what you're doing is a huge help to my work, too.
Well, you know what? It's so fulfilling, an absolute pleasure to serve this ecosystem and help this organism grow.
Sure.
It's an exciting part of my life and a good way to contribute to something big.
Yeah, cool. Well, keep it going.
I wish you all the best in, you know, shutting down your foundation and getting yourself out of a job.
Next time we talk, I have no job.
Well, we can hope. Yeah, no, it's beautiful stuff. Thanks for being here.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for having me.